The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this December 4th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on what's just another rainy, cold, nasty day in Auburn, Opelika. A day that makes you want to stay inside and just not work, really. But we're here, and we're working, and we're happy to be here and working. At least they're not making us do a remote outside or something. So, no, we're happy to be here on this Thursday, and tons to talk about on the show this afternoon. We're getting into basketball season pretty heavily today in terms of our conversations about Auburn last night, the SEC, ACC, ACC, SEC Challenge. Sorry, I'm uncultured. I'll get that fixed. Talk about that. Plus, we got some great guests on the show today. But, Christian, happy Thursday. How are you, sir?
Happy Thursday. We would do a remote outside if it was needed. If somebody's
somebody
really interested
to pay for
in
it. Yeah.
If somebody's really wanting us to go do a remote outside, Jacob, wear a nice white top, and it'll be have a good time.
It would give me an excuse to wear a beanie.
That's fair.
I love a good beanie. I do. No. I have like 80 of them. I just don't get to wear them down here.
You brought one for the iron. Did you wear it?
I did. I put it on the second half. Yeah.
That was a smart move.
Yeah, I did.
It was a smart move. We're talking a lot of Auburn basketball here in the first hour as Auburn defeats North Carolina State 83-73 last night. Our thoughts, Stephen Pearl's thoughts. I was there, got to ask a couple of questions, and funny enough, he has the longest opening statements of any coach that I've ever met before, and I think he halfway does it strategically because he makes everybody go to their second and third question rather than, okay, I'm going to sit here for 30 minutes and ask answer all of the questions. Instead, he answers about everything, but still gave some really good feedback, gave some really good thoughts about the game. We'll dive into that. We'll also switch our focus to Arizona, the number two team in the country, and talk about how, quite frankly, if you play the way they did last night, you don't stand a chance against Arizona on Saturday. That is a 9 o'clock ESPN tip on Saturday. So championship Saturday, you get to watch all, or I guess championship weekend, you have Thursday games, you have Friday games.
Yeah, there's a
all
ton
the games
of games tomorrow.
On Saturday. Oh, man.
What?
Today is Thursday. I thought it was Wednesday. I was thinking tomorrow. Bunch of games Friday,
yes,
and then
yeah,
Saturday.
There's like four or five games tomorrow night, bunch of games on Saturday, too, across college football.
And then basically as soon as the Big Ten championship ends, you get to turn on Auburn
and
Arizona.
Yeah, so, that's a late night Saturday.
It is a very late night. But all of that conversation before we get to Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joins us every single Thursday at 2:30. Going to get his thoughts on Alex Golish on early signing day, and then, of course, on Auburn basketball as well before we take a look at all of the scores around college basketball, around the ACC-SEC Challenge, because the SEC went 3-6 in night one. They go 6-1 in night two to win the challenge 9-7. So we'll be able to dive into all of that here in hour number one.
Yep, so we're going to have a good show today. A couple of guests here on the program. Brad Law in hour number one, as he said. Of course, Chris Gordy will join us in hour number two as well. But outside of those two guests, if you want to be a part of the show, you absolutely can. We encourage it, actually. You can give us a call at 334-321-1390. Again, that's 334-321-1390. If you want to call in, be on the air, give us some of your thoughts on Auburn basketball, more Auburn football thoughts, generic football thoughts, or college football playoff, or anything you want to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call again, 334-321-1390, or you can always shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box, which is open each and every day for you at 334-784-1067. And last night inside of Neville Arena, Auburn men's basketball walks away with a 10-point win over NC State, 83-73, to help the SEC, as you mentioned, Christian, get the victory for the second year in a row in the ACC-SEC Men's Basketball Challenge. And you and I were talking late last night after this game, and for anybody who didn't go or watch or listen,
yeah, my favorite term,
the box score viewer, mm-hmm, would look at this and say, oh, nice win, Auburn. Yeah. Good job. 10-point win. That was a previously ranked NC State team.
You covered?
You won. You covered, which is what great teams do. And all is good, right? Everything's fine. Auburn played great. Kind of. And Stephen Pearl, his comments were just phenomenal. And we're going to get to those in just a little bit. But you were there. I was able to watch at home, had some other duties and things. But overall, this is a good win for Auburn. I don't want that to be lost in the conversation we're going to have today, right? That's a good win for Auburn at home against NC State. Unfortunately, because of how the net rankings and things work and how the committee looks at it, it is a resume-building win, but you're not going to get full credit for this because it was at home, which is what Bruce Pearl talked about when he was the head coach and why this is the biggest game inside Neville Arena in non-conference play. But you beat a talented NC State team.
You did, and
against Will Wade, who's a really good head coach.
A really, really good head coach, and he gave his thoughts in the post-game press conference as well, and I was really impressed with his comments that he made, basically talking about his team, how he expects this to be a big step in the right direction, and how both teams kind of gave very similar remarks, and some people took it initially when Will Wade was speaking about it of, well, we shot the ball 20 more times, they made some tough threes, we didn't, and that's really all that you can't really do anything else about it. There were a couple people in there that was like, okay, but like, you lost the game, it's fine. And then Steven came in and basically said the same thing, and it was like, oh, okay, maybe those comments did make a little bit of sense. But this team is still so young and still figuring out how to play the game together, and there's obviously a couple of those possessions that are very frustrating, just based off of what the half court does or doesn't look like. And you feel like this team impressively sits at 7-2. They're 5-0 at home. And there's still so many different things that you can complain about, but you've yet to complain about the same thing multiple games in a row. And I think that's something that is very impressive. It goes to the point that you're making of how this is still a very impressive win and still looks good and can still continue to build momentum if you're the Auburn Tigers, right? I mean, in Las Vegas against Michigan, even if you throw that game out the window. Oregon, the question was rebounding, and you got out rebounded. You then work your way into St. John's, and you play about 13, 14 minutes of great basketball. Then all of a sudden, you turn the ball over a couple of times, and they give up a couple big-time runs. The free throw line, however, comes back to help you. Now the free throw line last night was fantastic. You were 19 of 22 from the free throw line. You out-rebounded this North Carolina State team 35 to 22. You shot 59% from the floor, 55% from three, which we'll get to here in just a moment. But then you start looking at the negatives.
Yeah.
Only 10 assists. That number is not good enough to play
on 26 made shots.
On 26 made shots goes to show you that ISO ball. And again, the individual performances, which, yes, we will also get to and want to give the flowers to, but having a great view of Stephen Pearl, even after made shots, goes to show he was not satisfied with a lot of the possessions, even if they found the bottom of the net. You did have 26 Points in the paint, you only had 11 fast break points, which you feel like that number for how athletic this team is going to have to continue to rise. But 20 turnovers. That is the number that Stephen Pearl highlighted. We made jokes waiting for Stephen to come in, and it was, okay, how many true thoughts are out there before he brings up turnovers? And I said two. And he said, he walked in, sat down, and said, yeah, gave this the quote that I'm sure everybody's seen about how, you know, great the fans were, how great everything was, even when the performance like this sucked, because turnovers were just terrible. And it did not take long at all. And a lot of those were not forced by NC State. It was lazy passes. It was just balls getting intercepted in the lane, trying to throw the skip hook pass from the far corner when you're falling out of bounds. Things that just do not benefit what you want to do. That being said, you didn't complain about Auburn's defense at all.
No, not at all. And those types of numbers, the bad stats, they jump off the page, right? And so you expected Stephen Pearl to address that. You expect them to continue to address that in practice and in preparation for Arizona this weekend. And there's a lot of things that you could say with the next statement I'm about to make. If you have 20 turnovers on the road at Arizona on Saturday night, you're going to get beat by 40.
It's going to look like the Michigan game.
Yes, yeah. It will. And there are several things that could go into that factor of you getting beat badly in that game. But, as you just said, defensively, that's one of the better performances Auburn's had this year.
It is. What is this, the third time that you've held a top 25 team, or the second time you've held a top 25 KenPom team to their lowest scoring average and their lowest shooting numbers?
Yeah. I mean, with this in St. John's.
That is very, very impressive to look at. And so, yeah, you complain about certain things in certain games, and this game will be another one of those things. Another thing that you highlight on the good side of things is NC State missed, what, 38 shots, had only 8 offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good percentage when you look at defensive rebounds, when you look at closing it, forcing the Wolfpack to one and done. And again, it's spread out. You don't have your one rebounder anymore. Yes, Keyshawn Hall had 10. Elijah Freeman had 5. KO had 9. Tahad had 3. Jovic had 5. Sebastian Williams Adams had 1. Man, he's been so impressive. He's turned more into a guard than he is a true forward. And it's so, so impressive to watch. I mean, this could truly be a backup point guard situation as you work your way down the stretch, especially if foul trouble ever gets to one of the guards in SEC play. But really, really impressive to see the kind of team rebounding that you need to against a team that is okay at rebounding. That's not necessarily their overall strength, but somebody that, you know, again, if you're a top 25 KenPom offense, I'm guaranteed to believe those double digits of those points are offensive rebounds, kick out for open threes. You only allow 10 made threes as well.
And this defensive performance and this type of defensive performance should not be a surprise for most Auburn fans because of what Stephen Pearl is. He's a defensive-minded guy. He was the DC for his father, Bruce, when BP was the head coach. And so playing defense the way that you did in this game and against St. John's, and I didn't think you played bad defense against Michigan. That team just hit some ridiculous shots, and then it was a blowout down the stretch, right? I mean, wasn't a great defensive performance, but you know what I'm saying. You play the way you did last night defensively, you'll be in every game you play, including this one on Saturday against Arizona. And Steven's actually meeting with the media right now with some quotes out there that we'll get to in just a moment. But we want to hear from you, 334-321-1390. If you have thoughts on Auburn basketball's win over NC State last night, 83-73, you can give us a call or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And those are the team details, the team notes that we wanted to take and make on, right? But you start diving into the individual box scores, and the quote that I think stands out most to me from Steven last night, he was actually on the post-game radio show with Andy Burcham and said, our offense was atrocious. He said, it was bad. He said, we got bailed out by big shot making from Kevin Overton and Keyshawn Hall, which is absolutely true. You get 28 from Keyshawn Hall, and you get 29 from KO, who both just got in fuego from downtown, okay? 5 of 7 from deep for Keyshawn Hall, and 6 of 9 from deep for Kevin Overton. Keyshawn Hall, you expect that from. KO is, I love the guy, I do. He's not a 66% free throw three-point shooter.
And even doubling down, I don't think many people expect 5 of 7 from 3 from Keyshawn Hall.
No.
I think that coming into the season, we kind of compared it to him. He's a little bit of a better spot-up shooter and can create off the dribble than Janai can. But if he can be that 1 for 3, 2 for 4, enough to respect it to where he can get downhill like he wants to do, that was what you expect from Keyshawn Hall. But yeah, 5 of 7 and a couple of those, the turnaround three at the end of possessions, the step back threes with hands in the face. He did knock down a couple easy shots early, which Will Wade talked about after the game, saying these guys know how to shoot the basketball.
Yeah, if I mean, guys are going to make shots sometimes.
If you let them get confident and see the ball go through the net two times on easy looks, that now builds the confidence to where those tougher shots now become more confidence, and those guys were able to knock them down.
And so you think about it, it's easy to say, what if? But if you don't get 28 from Keyshawn Hall and 29 from Kevin Overton, there's a good chance you lose that basketball game. But you did. You got those points. You got those guys. You made those shots. You made those plays, and you won the basketball game. We're not trying to sit here and pick apart Auburn's win and say that it was a fluke, right? But you cannot expect to do that in every single game and compete in the SEC, get to the NCAA tournament, and try to make a run. It was good enough last night, but moving forward, you've got to have some other guys step up. 3 points from Keyshawn Murphy is unacceptable. 6 points from Dahad Pettiford on 1 of 7 shooting, again, inside of Neville Arena, is unacceptable. And just 11 bench points is unacceptable. Now, Auburn's bench is very short. Auburn is still trying to work through some injuries and get guys back in a position to play legitimate basketball. You talked about Sway, who you can't say enough good things about. I would like to see him rebound a little bit more, I guess. He only had one board last night. That's just if I have to pick something to comment on. But, yeah, you said it. 7 points, 4 assists. Did have 3 turnovers. Don't love that. But made up for it with 2 steals and a block. So, and he only had 1 foul, which is nice.
And his ability down low, they talked about it in the quotes that KO and Keyshawn mentioned of how the coaches call him Baby Bron just because of his ability to create off the dribble. I mean, you're seeing the Janai Broom low post block passing that Sway had. I mean, there were a couple of times the kickouts to 3-point shooters in the corner on passes that you didn't think were possible to get to the corner. I mean, his ability to play make, you saw him, I believe it was on the one rebound that he got, took it coast to coast and laid it in. I mean, continues to be more and more impressive, and that is one of the very bright spots for Auburn coming off the bench, as is Filip Jovic, who is a completely different player than who we thought he was and who we've seen from the beginning of the game or beginning of the season.
Yeah, it didn't show up in the scoring column, obviously, but it you could just see it. You can visibly see the difference in 38 when he's on the floor from the first 2 or 3 games of the season to what he was last night. There's just a confidence factor. He's comfortable.
Keyshawn and Kevin said that he is the perfect example of one of those guys that you love playing with and hate playing against. Yeah. You love when he is on your team, but because he just does all of the little things right. Steven mentioned it, just talking about his versatility, how he can guard 1 through 5, and you feel like he's comfortable doing so, which allows Auburn to switch when they need to still create some sort of mismatches or when the other teams try to create mismatches. I'm not a believer completely in plus-minus numbers because
I think people look into it way too much.
I think they look at it too much. However, I think when you look, I don't think college basketball really has it, but the NBA has individual plus-minuses, which with your assignments and stuff, and I think that makes a little bit bigger of a deal. But in college basketball and just in basketball in general, when you're playing 5-on-5, if I'm on the other side of the court and this dude knocks down 3 straight 3s, that shouldn't count as a -9 for me.
Right.
However, I think this number very much stands true that in the 24 minutes that Jovic played, he was plus 22, led the team in a plus 22 margin. And again, it didn't necessarily show up on the stat sheet, but You want to talk about a guy that does all of the, or is continuing to do all of the little things right that don't necessarily show up on a scoreboard, making the hockey assist, right?
Yep.
Gets the rebound, kicks it out, or the one more to the one more, or creating the little seals that lead to open layups. He did it on the Sway fast break. He did it on the Elijah Freeman one-handed dunk. He does the little things that you just love having as a teammate on the floor.
Talked about the bench only having 11 points, and that has to be better moving forward. But Auburn is not at 100%. I mentioned earlier as we get to break that Stephen Pearl is meeting with the media right now, previewing Arizona. He says that injuries to Abdul Bashir and an illness to Simon Walker have stalled progress in the backup guard group. And this is a tweet from Justin Hokanson, by the way. And he says, but he did praise freshman Caden Magwood's confidence last night and how he handled tough coaching on Wednesday. And I got some texts from folks who were in the building. Again, I wasn't there. You were. I had some folks telling me that Steven was on Cade Magwood. And I think Steven apologized today. Not like fully about that, but I think I saw Justin Ferguson. I know we got to get to break. I think I saw Justin Ferguson put out a tweet about what Steven had to say in terms of him getting on Cade Magwood. He says, quote, from Stephen Pearl, I want to give Caden Magwood some love because I lit into him more than I have with anybody this season. I had like 10 people reach out to me that said they watched that and saw him say, that's my bad. As a freshman, are you kidding? That's unbelievable. So Caden Magwood's going to be a really good player.
He is.
He's got a long way to go.
Yes.
And you could tell it's the story as old as time for parents and coaches and teachers or whoever, bosses, the ones who ride you the hardest, the ones who are on you constantly, it's because they believe in you and they see what you can be. They see your potential. They see your greatness, and they just want it to come out as fast as possible. That is the relationship, I feel like, between Stephen Pearl and freshman backup point guard Caden Magwood.
And to be fair, Stephen was on everybody last night. He was on the referees. He was on his coaching staff.
He was on one, buddy. He was on one, man.
He was on just about everybody. He was on the alumni section. He got on to everybody quite a couple of times last night.
All right, we got to get to our first break here in hour number one. We'll come back, talk a little bit more basketball as Auburn now preparing to take on second-ranked Arizona. Then we get to Brad Law, the Auburn Sports Network, to talk to him about basketball and all the big updates around football as well as we're just underway here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break, where then we will welcome in our friend Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. We'll talk to him more about Auburn basketball, of course, taking down NC State last night, 83-73 in the ACC SEC Challenge. We'll talk to him about Arizona, get a little preview of a top 25 game against the number 2 ranked team in the country. Plus, get his thoughts on Alex Golish and recruiting and things like that. But since we are a little bit limited on time here, Christian, we'll go ahead and hit quickly on the SEC winning the ACC-SEC Challenge. It's a mouthful trying to say all that. I know we'll hit on some more games and scores from this week here in a little bit, but shout out to the SEC because they got embarrassed day one. Day one, they were owned by the ACC and then turned it around on its head last night and won it for the second year in a row.
Yeah. If you do look at it, though, you were 3-6 in night one with a one-point loss that many people say Florida wins with a goaltending correctly being called, but what do we know? It's Cameron Indoor.
No, not a bad call inside Cameron Indoor.
Not a bad call. No. The correct call.
Oh.
Yes. The correct call, even though it hit the backboard 4 times before getting blocked and was still clean. Tennessee with, I say these, but it's not a blowout when you lose 6. Here we go, 6-3. It's a 1-point loss, a 2-point loss, a 3-point loss, a 3-point loss. Oklahoma wins. A&M wins. Holy cow. Georgia absolutely blows out.
Yeah, they did.
Florida State, which is one of the more impressive wins of the entire tournament, and then Missouri loses a close game. And so although that doesn't truly help your your overall case that at least wasn't you go out and you lose by 20 in every single game, but the ability for the SEC to respond in night two. Auburn gets a 10-point win. Arkansas with a really, really impressive win at home over Louisville. They
that
won
was
that
a good
one
win.
89-80. Alabama gets up big, blows the lead completely, blows the lead. I mean, they were down 3 after being up by 15 at halftime, but close it out, win at 90-84. Vanderbilt gets a nice win. LSU picks up a nice win. They stay undefeated. Texas, I know you will get to our thoughts on the bottom tier of the SEC this year. Virginia blows them out, to Mississippi State picks up a nice win at Georgia Tech. So in night two, the SEC goes 6-1 to win the challenge 9-7. And so back-to-back years, it was 14-2 last year, not 9-7 this year. 2-0.
Yeah, and a year that I think the SEC as a whole in college basketball will not be as good as it was last year. And I think you and I said that at the start of the season. There will still be some good teams in this conference, and it will still compete in the NCAA tournament and have some teams that go deep. But I don't think you see 14 teams make it to the NCAA tournament out of the Southeastern Conference.
And you don't have that perennial team of four, or the tier of four teams that are just that much better.
Not yet.
Than everybody else.
Not yet. I still think Kentucky can get there. I still think Florida can get there. I think Alabama and Auburn can still get there. It's going to take some work, but I think they have a chance to do that. Also, by the way, that win for Vanderbilt was against an undefeated SMU team who was coming off a win against Mississippi State. So not too bad for the SEC in the challenge as they get it done again against the ACC. We'll talk more about that, plus football news with Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network after this.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us on a chilly day in the Auburn Opelika area. And we get to the phone lines for our first guest of the afternoon, a guy that we did not talk to last Thursday, but he did join us last Friday when we were out at Rally House the day after Thanksgiving to preview the Iron Bowl, and now we get to talk about a coaching hire, a defensive coordinator retention, recruiting, basketball, all the things with our man Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. How are you, Brad? Hope you had a good weekend and having a good week and staying warm and dry out there.
Yeah, Jacob, doing great. It's been a busy one for sure. Hard to believe that we're about 100 or 100-plus hours into the Alex Golish tenure, and we've had signing day and a basketball game. It's, just because the football season ended doesn't mean that things have slowed down. If anything, they've ramped up.
Well, Brad, I was told that I needed to be the one to pick the direction that we go here today, but I figured I'd go the way that you just mentioned it, right? The conclusion of the Iron Bowl. John Cohen, throughout the entire coaching search, has stated that he wanted to have a head coach by the Sunday morning or the Sunday afternoon following the Iron Bowl to give everybody as much time as they could for signing day, to work with retention, to work with the transfer portal. We woke up Sunday morning and saw the news that Alex Golish, the USF head coach, had accepted the job at Auburn. What are your initial thoughts when you saw that news break officially?
Well, he said from the beginning that he wanted to make the announcement the Sunday morning after the Iron Bowl, and they made it official at 10 a.m., the Sunday after the Iron Bowl. They went and got a guy who's had an edge, who's developed relationships with players, who's been a recruiting coordinator, a hard worker, a successful coordinator, a successful head coach, and somebody who will work harder than himself than he's going to ask his players to work. And I think that matters. I think that's kind of, you know, in this conference, everybody has good players. Everybody has facilities. Everybody has NIL opportunities. We think subjectively that Auburn's are better in some of those categories. But if you look at it neutrally, they're competitive. Like at worst, they're competitive. And so what's the difference? You're going to have a ton of one-score games in SEC football. This is the biggest conference in all of college football. And, so can you hire a guy who's going to develop a culture in January and February to help you win games in November, who will develop a culture that works hard enough on Monday and Tuesday to win games on Saturday? and that's what Alex Golish has been at his previous stops, and that is what the expectation is that he brings to this job.
And we've seen what he's been able to do over the last several days with the introductory press conference and the things he said there and the National Signing Day or early National Signing Day yesterday and a recruiting class that, Brad, I'll be honest, I think it ended up better than I thought it was going to be even before there was a coaching change. And so what is it that he has done in these last couple of days and has the opportunity to do moving forward that could win him over with some more fans here in town?
Well, you've already seen with, 48 hours to work that he flipped a couple of guys, Tavian Branch, the big defensive lineman out of Pennsylvania that was, I guess he was a Penn State commit for a long time, 6'4", 295. Got a couple of guys committed to Texas, the Wells brothers, that one a defensive end, one a defensive lineman that were committed to Texas and South Alabama. They flipped. You have a Deshaun Spencer out of Mobile, a wide receiver out of Saraland High School, maybe the best receiver to come out of Saraland in several years. He flips to Auburn. And so you're already, you see quickly DJ Broughton, a tight end out of Mobile. There's some connections to the state of Alabama that he's had at his various stops elsewhere, and he immediately started working those connections. And so is it a top 10 class? No. Was it ever going to be a top 10 class? Because it was going to be smaller. I doubt it. I think with what he had, he got every bit out of signing day that he could possibly get out of it. And so even if you don't look at the results themselves, and I think there's some of the results that you can objectively say are impressive, but even if the results themselves don't blow you away relative to other schools in the league, you can look at the process that he used and the time that he had and see a little bit of his operation.
That's one thing that we've tried doing a little bit of explanation on is rather than looking at where you stand in the overall recruiting class, because we knew that it was going to be a little bit of a smaller party joining the Auburn Tigers in the 2026 season. Instead, look at the average ranking of the recruit, which ranks right around 25th, which is still very, very impressive based off of where everything could be and everything was prior to about a week ago or maybe a little bit further back than that. What is your thoughts, Brad, too, on the DJ Durkin retention and how important that was for not only Golish and the defense, but just the recruiting class in itself, because Durkin, one of the best recruiters, one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, and his entire staff keeping King Williams as well, all of those guys making that side of the ball that much more important, that much more dominant, and keeping as many recruits as you can as the top three were all on the defensive side of the ball.
I did a new Village Vice with Zach Blackerby earlier this afternoon. I called DJ Durkin the biggest winner in the first 100 hours of Alex Golish's tenure here. He went with Coach King Williams because, and from DJ's perspective, he gets to stay at Auburn. He gets to stay entrenched in a defense that he has helped build now for a couple of years. He gets to continue to work with players who are familiar with his system. And he's familiar with their strengths, and he knows where to challenge and push them in the offseason. He gets to stay in a place that he enjoys being and in a program that is appreciative of what he's done over the last couple of years. And he gets to stay and be a part of that. And so I think I think he's the biggest winner in the first 100 hours of Coach Golish's tenure here. It's certainly a positive for roster retention. And you saw some guys who were committed to Auburn for a while defensively that wound up signing elsewhere at the end of the day. And I don't know. I think it's a lot more impactful when you look at the consistency of the guys who will stay and be and continue to be a part of this defense now for a third season than it is for signing day or any incoming player. You also have to think that if this offense becomes as explosive and, more importantly, productive as we think it has the ability to be, then his stock, DJ's stock, continues to rise higher because his defenses will be even more dangerous and productive in their own right. They became one of the best in the country at forcing turnovers in the second half of the season. And, if you get leads and other teams need to throw more and you get in more predictable passing situations, now you can wreak havoc with that aggressive defense even more than what we saw last year.
We're talking with Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And we're going to move on to basketball in just a moment, but do want to step out of Auburn for a moment, Brad, and ask if you had any thoughts or opinions on a coaching hire outside of Auburn, whether it's the SEC or college football, a coordinator, head coach. I mean, any of those that have caught your eye that you think are important for people to know?
Well, I think they're important everywhere. I mean, we'll see. It'll be fascinating because what do we have, five changes this year? Almost a third of the league had turnover at that position, and we'll see if it's done at this point. I mean, you still got the championship game and the playoffs to go, and we'll see. I'm interested to see how Pete Golding does at Ole Miss and just how much that program changes without their previous head coach. You know, outside of that, you look at who's on Auburn's schedule next year. I think Auburn makes – it's not the hire that gets the biggest headlines because that was always going to be Lane, but I like this fit as well as I like any fit of any coaching change around the country, this one at Auburn.
So we'll see how it works out for Auburn and the other SEC teams and all the other college football teams who have been making head coaching hires across college football. But now we flip to the hardwood as Auburn returned home from Las Vegas, where, of course, Stephen Pearl and the guys went 2-1 in their trip to Vegas in the Players Era Invitational, where they beat Oregon, they lost to Michigan, and everybody else did too, and then beat a really good St. John's team, returned home for the ACC-SEC Challenge last night inside of Neville Arena, where Auburn gets a 10-point victory over the Wolfpack and their head coach Will Wade, 83-73. Brad, you were courtside with the guys on the air over on Wings 94.3 and the Auburn Sports Network. What did you see from Auburn last night in their 10-point victory over NC State?
Just scorching hot from three. They look like a team playing at home. Half of their shot attempts were from three in the game. They were 22 of the 44 shot attempts were there. NC State didn't play great perimeter defense. Auburn's perimeter defense was the difference in the game. Tigers shot 55% from three. NC State came in shooting 42%. They shot 33% from three and took eight more threes than Auburn, but Auburn made two more than NC State. Total shot attempts, NC State had 20 more shot attempts than Auburn, and they made the exact same number of shots. And so I just thought that was kind of the difference in the game. Auburn was able to overcome 20 turnovers, 13 of them in the first half. And then once they went on a little run in the second half and grabbed that double-digit lead, there wasn't going to be an answer from NC State. Auburn was able to make enough baskets and keep them there. So that's kind of the long form. It was the Kevin Overton game. He flat out took over, 6 of 9 from deep. Sensational. He and Keyshawn Hall just took over in the second half. Overton took over the entire game, and it was awesome to see them come back and answer the challenge quickly, especially after NC State went on a run and grabbed a 1-point lead in the first half. Stephen Pearl called timeout. Auburn answered back, took a halftime lead, and then didn't trail in the second.
Yeah, Stephen brought up a bunch of good points talking about the negatives on the turnovers that you mentioned, but, man, so much credit goes to the defense. The second time already that you've held a top 25 KenPom team to their lowest scoring average, and you have another chance to do so again on Saturday night. A late tip over on ESPN, eighth ranked, in, according to KenPom, at least, the second-ranked team in the country, the Arizona Wildcats. 10th, their offensive rating. They are 12th defensive rating. What do you want to see from the Auburn Tigers as they go on the road, a hostile environment, and to try and pick up another really big-time win in this stretch before non-conference play finishes?
Yeah, this is a really, really, really good Arizona team. They have five guys who average double figures and then a sixth who's right underneath it. Awaka gets 9.9 points a game. They're going to play, what is it, eight? No, they're going to play, yeah, eight guys, and nobody plays more than 29 minutes a game. Even Pete, the big guy, the freshman, who's just been unbelievable for them. Koa Pete, 16 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, shooting 54% from the floor as a freshman, and they're just utilizing their rotations really well to stay fresh. So, you know, can Auburn continue to progress defensively? I thought we saw a big jump in that last night. So can they progress defensively, cover all five spots on the floor, and do it without fouling? And then, you know, what do you see from Tahad Pettiford? It's a top five opponent on the road. These are the moments where he's been the big game hunter, and where he's kind of gone crazy. So if he does that, and you get the consistency from Kevin Overton, and you know Keyshawn is Keyshawn, then you got a chance to go shock some people Saturday night. Should be a fantastic game.
This may be a difficult question to answer because you're Brad Lawn, not Tommy Lloyd, but would you expect those rotation minutes to change a little bit against a high-quality opponent? Do you think Arizona kind of sticks with the same? And then the follow-up question for Auburn is, you're now seeing a lot of these guys play a lot more minutes when it used to be that kind of minutes rotation for the Auburn Tigers. Obviously, the flu and the injuries have played a little bit of a factor from last night's game, but what do you expect to see minutes-wise on both sides? Do they change anything, or do you keep it up before conference play gets started?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Their next two games are the next two Saturdays against Auburn and then next Saturday against Alabama. So they've already played three ranked teams, and all three of those games were decided by two possessions. The other games that they've played have been complete blowouts decided by at least 27 points, if I'm looking at these numbers correctly. So they're fresh because they haven't played since Saturday. They've not had a midweek game like Auburn just had against NC State. And their last two games were against teams that they ran out of the gym. So I think they're fresh. My guess is that they'll try to keep those rotations pretty heavy in the first half. And then if it's tight down the stretch, they'll do what most teams do, and that's shrink the bench and go with their main five or six guys. And hopefully Auburn puts them in that spot Saturday night to have to do that.
He is Brad Law with the Auburn Sports Network, part of a group that does incredible work with football now being over, full-on basketball season. And, Brad, I know you're excited. Baseball season will be here before we know it, and you'll be on the call with Andy Burcham for those games as well. But Andy will be out in Arizona on Saturday, assuming you'll be back here in the studio. Is that right on Saturday night?
Yes. Yeah, we'll be back in the studio and ready to go from here, thousands of miles away from where the action is happening. But that's all right. We'll hold it down in two places.
That's right. Well, that'll be over on Wings 94.3. Late night tip. You got coffee or Red Bull or both or something to make sure you guys can stay awake and keep the thing rolling?
I may go run some miles before. That'll give me a little adrenaline boost before we get in there, yeah.
I love it. Well, hey, tell the people what's coming up because Tiger Talk is now tonight with basketball season here. Tiger Talk tonight and a basketball game on Saturday night.
Well, and the women play a lot on Thursdays. I'm very excited about tonight's Tiger Talk over on Wings, and we'd invite people out to Baumhauer's Victory Grill. It's the last time we're on location at Baumhauer's for the calendar year. So if you don't have dinner plans yet, come out at 6 o'clock or get there a little before 6 and join us. Stephen Pearl will be there, and Larry Vickers will be there as well. We usually don't get to talk with the women's basketball head coach because they have games on Thursdays, and they will most of the time in conference play, but they were at Syracuse yesterday, hard-fought game, lost in overtime, and he's done a magnificent job with this team, and we're looking forward to having him on the second half of the show tonight. So we'd love for people to come out and be with us at 6.
Brad Law, the Auburn Sports Network, we appreciate your time as always. Enjoy Tiger Talk tonight, and we'll have you again on next Thursday.
Always a pleasure. War Eagle, guys.
War Eagle. That's Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network with us every single Thursday, 2:30, right here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take our final break of hour number one, come back, talk some more basketball because the games this week have been incredible, and then we'll get into hour number two. All that coming up here on ESPN 106.7. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. Again, our usual Thursday 2:30 guest. We talk to him every year throughout football, basketball, and baseball season. And he is one of two guests that we'll have on today. Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC will join us coming up at 3:30. But we got a couple of minutes, Christian, as we wrap up the first hour, and just looking kind of college basketball as a whole, because I know there's obviously been so much football talk here as of late, and rightfully so, but man, the season is off to a scorching start. And just to give people an update, right, on what's going on, at least in the SEC, okay, with the ACC-SEC challenge that just wrapped up. You've got teams, of course, like Auburn and Alabama, and Kentucky, who are playing just incredible non-conference schedules. There are two teams. I want to challenge people right now on our way out. There are two teams in the SEC in college basketball who are currently undefeated on the season. Obviously, no, we haven't played any SEC games yet, but in the non-con slate on the 2025-2026 season, without looking it up, shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. Can you tell me who the two undefeated teams are in the SEC as it stands right now?
I'm going to play along too. I haven't.
You haven't looked? I pulled it up.
I haven't looked at. I know one of them because I mentioned it in the SEC-ACC challenge that this team stays undefeated, but I don't remember the second one.
Got a text. One person says Vandy and Georgia. Another says Vandy and LSU.
I know that Vandy. Vandy is.
Vandy is correct. Vanderbilt is ranked 17th in the country. They are 9-0 on the season right now. So Vanderbilt is one. Vanderbilt is undefeated. Again, 9-0 on the season. There's another team in the SEC who is currently undefeated. I'll give you another hint. They are 8-0 on the season.
I was
going to
say, I don't believe that it's.
There are two teams who are 8-1. I've got two people who have it right now.
Okay. Well, it's not. Apologies for the first texter. It's not Georgia because they lost to Clemson in the Shriners Charleston.
The Shriners Children's Charleston Classic.
They lost to that in overtime, didn't they?
I think so. Georgia's not. They're 8-1. Missouri's 8-1. Auburn, Tennessee, Texas A&M, 7-2.
Okay, well then, yeah.
You've got three teams at 6-2 as well. The other team is LSU.
Yeah.
LSU, undefeated, 8-0 so far to start the 25-26 campaign. Now, their wins are not anything crazy. Their best one is DePaul or Boston College, but they're 8-0. They're undefeated, so there you go.
Hey, in college football, that's all that matters.
That's all that matters, man. Doesn't matter who you beat. Just matters that you beat them, right? All right, we're out of time, and now we're number one. Stick around. We're talking more Auburn football recruiting coming up in hour number two. Plus, we'll take a look at some comments from Auburn's former head coach who still believes this team is close. And then Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. All that coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us as we get underway in the second hour of today's program. And if you missed any of the first hour, we had a lot of fun. We talked Auburn basketball as they beat NC State last night, 83-73 in the ACC-SEC Challenge. Also talked a little bit about the challenge as a whole as the SEC defeated the ACC in the competition for the second second year in a row. And then we talked to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network about basketball, his thoughts on Alex Golish being hired as Auburn's new head football coach, and what he thinks the future could look like for the Auburn football program. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, we'll post the audio for you on our station website in a podcast version in our podcast center at ESPNAU.com. You can also check it out wherever you get your podcast, but the best way to find it is at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we're going to start it out talking a little bit from day one of Auburn's early national signing day, and also have a conversation on who are some of the must-keep players on the Auburn football roster right now. If you can name three, or if you can name five on each side of the football that you feel like are non-negotiables, they need to be wearing Navy jerseys inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium next year. Who would those names be? We'll have a fun conversation, and again, the text box open as well. We'll have a nice, fun little blast from the past on Hugh Freeze saying that they're close, saying that despite not being the head coach, he's upset that he was not able to bring wins to the Auburn fan base, and then also some quotes on Jackson Arnold that many players have taken to social media to basically say that that's not how you should go about the way that you do your job. Some are at Auburn, and some are no longer at Auburn because they transferred out. But they have made their way to social media to basically say you're blaming Jackson for not having a job anymore. And so a fun conversation on that side of things. That was before getting to Chris Gordy. That was conversation Chris, all in one word right there. But before we get to Chris Gordia, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, where we will get his grade or his ranking on coaching hires in the SEC, recap the SEC-ACC challenge with him, maybe talk a little bit of future college basketball just to see what his thoughts are, if he's kind of in that same boat of 14 teams is just too many to make the postseason tournament, and then just the overall value of the SEC championship this game or this weekend with Alabama and Georgia to see if it really has a true meaning other than Georgia trying to finally overcome Alabama. All of that coming up here in hour number two.
Yep, so until we get to Chris Gordy, phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show. We'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390. Your thoughts on anything we're talking about or anything else that you would like to talk about, you could come on the show, be on the air, and we'd love to hear from you at 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. Our man Eric in Auburn sent us a text at the end of the hour about Kentucky basketball and asking what the problem is with them. We'll get into that with Chris coming up in a little bit. But the quick answer there, Eric, because I know you're probably still listening, Kentucky's down three of their best players right now to injury. And
oh no, now they only have 12 millionaires that
they will get it figured out. But it's definitely a culture shock for the Cats right now, coming off a Sweet 16 appearance and Mark Pope getting booed in his own building right now. They're trying to figure it out, but I think Kentucky will be okay. But we'll talk to Chris Gordy about that a little bit more here in just a bit. But I do want to talk about Auburn football, because yesterday was early National Signing Day. I want to remind people that it's still technically the early National Signing Day, even though 90 to 95% of kids sign on that day. But I think overall, and I said this to Brad when we talked to him in the first hour, the recruiting class for Auburn football in 2026, A, we all know, was never going to be massive anyway. It was never going to be a huge class. It was never going to be a top 10 class. But you still wanted to go out and get some talent. The way that it ended yesterday and could still end by this week, and then the normal signing day in February, it's better than I thought it was even going to be, regardless of a coaching change happening.
Sure.
Even if Hugh Freeze had stayed as Auburn's head coach, I didn't think the recruiting class would look as good as it does right now. And no, it's not top five. It's not competing with Ohio State, but that's not the goal right now. In the future, of course, but not right now. It looks better than I expected it to, And that is a huge accomplishment for Alex Golish in 48 hours, DJ Durkin being on this staff still, Vontrell King-Williams being on this staff, and everybody else involved. This is a major victory for Auburn in the recruiting class for early National Signing Day yesterday.
It is. You get four official four stars when you're looking at 24/7 Sports, which is just the website that we have. We're, now when we're looking at Auburn Undercover, Jaquez Wilkes, again,
who?
The yeah, so Jaquez Wilkes.
One more time?
So Jaquez, if you listened to yesterday's show, you'd understand. You'd see how I brought it up yesterday.
And Jacob, I heard, said, you this time.
And Jacob,
you
said, you
said
also
it.
Brought up, you also, you know, talking to a guy like Jaquez Wilkes.
I don't think you said it, man. I don't think you said
we
it.
We did. Well, again, I got to see him firsthand.
Yeah, dude's pretty good.
Really good football player.
Dude is really good.
Really, really good football player.
It's not fair playing 1A football,
it's,
man.
It's not. But he'll be playing. Is he playing right now?
3A already played. I can't remember.
Is it 3A then 1A?
I thought it was 1A, 3A, 5A, but maybe it's 3, 1, I don't know. I don't know. I'll find out.
If that's the case, Wadley might be playing right now.
They might. I will find out for you.
But while we're doing that, yeah, Jaquez Wilkes leads the way, the four-star linebacker from Wadley, Alabama. When we were on the phone with Daryl Dapprich yesterday, we talked about the Wells brothers that committed and signed. Corey flips from Texas to Auburn. His brother flips from South Alabama to Auburn. But Corey Wells, the 6'5", 330-pound nose tackle.
That's ridiculous.
A four-star, the 190th-ranked player in the class. And then the Tootles, Shadarius Tootle, the 6'3", 210-pound linebacker. Those are the four official four-stars based off of where you look at it. You have a bunch of three-stars in there as well. And some of these guys are ones that Auburn flipped with Alex Golish. They did a nice job of keeping some of those big names in there as well. Jace Matthews tweeted out a couple of hours ago that he is confirming to be signing tomorrow at 2 p.m. And so we will be able to start the show tomorrow with good news or bad news.
Hopefully, yeah. To confirm, Wadley and Maplesville will be playing in the 1A state championship game in the Super 7 up in Birmingham. They kick off at 3 o'clock, so that game is probably about to start or has already started, yeah.
That'll be a really, really good game. So how cool is that? You sign your NLI, and then the very next day you get to go play for a state championship. Or yesterday you sign, and then you play for a state championship. We didn't bring up that game.
It went exactly like I thought it was going to go.
Yeah. Rather quiet on that side today.
Why?
I don't know.
I'm fine.
No, I'm saying on the Opelika side.
Oh. I was like, what? I'm good.
No.
Yeah. Haven't heard any dogs barking today.
I was trying to feed you into it.
Haven't heard
I don't
any
have
barking
a
going
I don't
on.
Have a dog
I heard some whimpering coming back down 280 last night, but I just figured the dog got lost. No, I'm kidding. Yes, Opelika.
Thompson's good.
Thompson. I don't know what to tell you, man.
Was it 48-10 the final?
48-10. Thompson outgained Opelika by over 400 yards in the football game. It wasn't close. It wasn't close. Thompson's just a different beast, dude. It really is. I talked to my buddy Van Riggs, who voice of Opelika, talked to him today, and he said it was super cool. It's first state championship game he's ever called, and said it was really neat to be there. Protective Stadium was nice and everything, but he basically said the same thing. He's like, yeah, I mean, Thompson just – Opelika does one thing really well, which is run the football. And Thompson said, yeah, you're not going to do that. And that was it. That was all she wrote. So,
and we saw the concern of Opelika's secondary with Auburn about every single time Myers dropped back, of how there was a wide open receiver. And when you have Trent Seaborn back there, makes things
who did
easier.
Basically nothing in the first half, because Thompson just ran it right down Opelika's throat pretty much the whole time. And then they let Seaborn throw it around, who ended up with – I think he had over 250 yards passing. I want to say 256. Is that right? I can't remember exactly. But regardless, yes, Thompson, 7A state champions for the 20th time in 10 years. So,
if you look up Trent Seaborn stats and state championship, the first.
Which game pulls up?
The first one. Oh, you don't want to know what the first one.
Eighth
grader Trent Seaborn.
Yeah. Oof. Eighth grade Trent Seaborn. Injured in hair. Yeah. Anyways,
I'm trying to see.
I wasn't at Auburn High then, so I can't wear that one.
No, that's fair. But again, Yeah, Auburn with three official four stars. They jump from anywhere. I saw them start at 78th in some places. I saw them jump as high or start as high as like 93rd, or I guess that's as low as 93rd. And looking at 247 right now, 36th overall. And so I think a very impressive jump from what we were expecting the names to hear. And you're seeing again a couple of the flips that you heard maybe a little bit of rumblings about, but there wasn't too much talk. And I think Texas felt rather confident with Corey Wells up until the Golish hire and then Durkin being retained. And then it got a little bit more worrisome and he ends up making the flip and signs again from Petal, Mississippi. So I think it's a very, very good class. I'm interested to see what the retention numbers look like, because that will then direct on what the transfer portal numbers look like. And so not jumping ship one way or the other on the numbers of signing day periods and signing day classes and transfer portals, because there's so much more when you truly dive into the numbers.
Spectre shot us a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067, which you can do at any time as well. He says, talking about every position but the offensive line, and I think he's talking about Auburn in general. He says, just telling it like it is. And once again, Auburn will never excel without an offensive line that does not execute. And you're exactly right, Spectre, but Auburn did pick up three offensive linemen in this recruiting class. You picked up the three-star offensive tackle, Wilson Zaire, 6'6", 280, out of the state of Georgia. He's the offensive tackle. You also pick up an interior offensive lineman at Parker Pritchett from Carver in Columbus, Georgia, 6'5", 310. He is a three-star. And then another interior offensive lineman, 6'3", 325, as a three-star, and Michael Lundy Foster from Tallahassee, Florida. Yes, they're all three-stars. I understand that. But at least their size is there, and at least that Auburn has a couple that they're bringing in and try to develop. And look, Auburn's going to have a new O-line coach. Auburn's going to have new guys on that side of the ball anyway. And so I understand where he's coming from. I would love for Auburn to get to the point of recruiting four and five star, which five star offensive linemen are rare, but you know what I'm talking about. Just the dudes of the offensive line groups across the country. He's right. Auburn has to get great offensive linemen if they want to get back to being great on offense.
And that's what the frustrating thing, as there were a lot of them from this past season, but we talked about what this offensive line could be and how Auburn could become the transfer portal destination for any offensive linemen that are trying to find the NFL draft in the next couple of years, because, what was it, six offensive linemen to start the season were graded with NFL, true NFL grades, mm-hmm. all five starting linemen, and then Tutal Miller in there as well. You fast forward 12 games and Auburn's dead last in sacks allowed per game. Goes to show you why scout grades don't necessarily tell the entire tale of the tape, but it's unfortunate that because of that, you now could see the negative trail of that rather than it being, okay, well, now high school is where we want to go. Now I want to go get guys out of the high school levels. We need to go get guys out of the portal, and this is a place that you need to go based off the offense, based off the development. You don't necessarily have that, at least from the previous head coach.
And so we proposed a question to start the second hour. We'd love to hear from people, especially in the on-the-line text box, the easiest way to get these answers out there, 334-784-1067. And we'll get to this after the break and then get to a fun or not-so-fun topic of conversation quickly. If you had to make a list, all right, top three or top five of must-keep players on this Auburn roster, because that's the high school recruiting side of it that we're talking about. But remember we said yesterday in our very advanced, very good-sounding acronym, RRP, right? Recruiting, retention, and portal, or RPR, whatever you want to use. Recruiting, retention, and portal. Auburn has done the recruiting part. You're done there, for the most part. Now it's time for retention. Try to keep as many guys on this roster as you can. And then you hit the portal, and you fill the gaps, and you fill the holes that you need, that you feel are on this roster, right? Auburn's done the recruiting part the best they can. It's time for retention. Who are the names on this roster, offensively or defensively, of the ones who can come back next year that you feel are must keep names for Auburn in 2026. We'll give our picks and our answers, but we want to hear from you. You can give us a call, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. Top three or top five must-keep players on the Auburn football roster for next season. We talk about that coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Got about 8 minutes or so before we take our bottom of the hour break. And a reminder, Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, the podcast, will be joining us on the phone lines as he does and has been doing for literally years now on Thursdays at 3:30. So we're looking forward to that. But we posed the question, and we want you to be a part of it, and we've got a ton of people texting in. We asked the question because we were talking high school recruiting for Auburn after National Signing Day, and now we've moved on to the next tier of the plan, which is retention, right? Retaining talent on Auburn's roster, because we broke it down this way, Christian, that Alex Golish and his staff, however that staff looks, right? Some of the defensive guys stay, and most offensive guys are going to be new. We broke it down that this is not a usual, normal situation for a brand new head coach at a P4 program. He's not taking over Kentucky's football roster. He's not taking over UCLA's football roster. He's not taking over Arkansas's football roster. He's taking over Auburn's roster, which we said was top five in the SEC this season, and I still believe that to be true. The idea is, how much of that can you retain? Obviously, you're going to lose some to graduation, eligibility, NFL draft, right? But of the eligible players who can come back to Auburn, who are the ones, top three or top five, that you think are must-keeps for Alex Golish and this Auburn football staff?
Oh, gosh. I made a little bit of a list on the offensive side and the defensive side just because of I think there's so many that are of importance. I think there's a lot of the list that could change just a little bit, but on the offensive side of things, I think that Deuce Knight is one of those non-negotiables. I think Cam Coleman is one of those non-negotiables. I'm going to throw Eric Singleton in that conversation as well.
Okay.
Because I think that he has the dynamic ability. You just didn't find ways to get him the football postseason, or post the early part of the season. Jeremiah Cobb is in that conversation for me as well. And then asterisk of Malcolm Simmons. And that is if Keyshawn Singleton from South Florida does not plan to come to Auburn. Keeping somebody else like that, I think, is a very big piece. Defensively, I start with Xavier Atkins. That is, you hope, the easiest non-negotiable because, again, he is a DJ Durkin guy. He talked about it after the Iron Bowl of how he doesn't want to go anywhere, and he's 100% for Auburn next year. I think Malik Autry is in that conversation. I think DeMarcus Riddick is in that conversation. I think Eric Winters is in that conversation. And then I think if you can keep Robert Woodyard his senior year, I think that's the fifth piece for Auburn defensively.
Okay. Some of the names that I have that people have texted, and we're about to get to Dak on the phone lines, Deuce Knight, Cam Coleman, the MVP on the defense is what Spectre said, so I assume that means Xavier Atkins.
Yes.
Jeremiah.
Hey, Keldrick Fox, only a junior.
Okay.
Just.
Okay. I've seen Xavier, Cam, Connor Liu on this list. Somebody said Jeremiah Cobb, Malik Blockton on the list as well. So lots of names out there that Auburn could try and keep that could make this team pretty competitive in year one for Alex Golish. So let's get to the phone lines. We got Dak standing by. What's up, brother? I got a few minutes for you, my man.
Hey, guys. Yeah, so talking about the roster, I think you got to keep Deuce McKnight on there. I don't think it's a huge deal if Cam Coleman leaves. I would not spend a whole lot of money on Cam. I think we need a running back, and we got to keep as many defensive players as we possibly can. I mean, I don't I don't think it's a big loss if we lose Cam. I know people's going to argue with me about that, but show me where he's worth that amount of money for what we get out of him, where we could maybe get three or four players for what we spend on him. Does that make sense?
Jack, yeah. was it you that's been very verbal about the ability that Cam is the straight line receiver?
Absolutely it is. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I get your point.
Show me one catch where he made a guy miss and he runs after a catch.
I don't think he has one.
That's absolutely right. And the reason he fumbled that football the other day is because he's not used to getting tackled, because most of the time he falls down when he catches a ball. The only time he don't fall down is when he's trying to out-jump somebody for a ball. Now, I'm not saying he can't change, but somebody needs to be honest with him and say, look, your goal is to make it NFL. You're not there yet. You're not that NFL guy yet, and you've got to do these things to be able to be that guy. And I stand by what I say. He's a straight-line receiver right now.
And I think that's coaching. Somebody just texted us and said that's coaching. And it is. It's what you said, too. And you hated for him because, yeah, when he was at Central Phoenix City, he didn't have to be a huge yards-after-catch guy because he was already past him when he caught the football.
That's right. And he didn't fear nobody in high school.
Right.
He's a little bit scared of getting hit. And somebody – I mean – I would just be honest and say, look, I know you want to be in the NFL one day. Right now, you can't play in the NFL until you start doing these things. Somebody has to be honest with him. We don't need a wide receiver coach that's going to be his homeboy and be his buddy. They need to be in his face and make him better.
Or show him how to run four-yard hitch routes.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you know, the other day against Bama when he ran the takeoff, okay, that DB was playing 12 yards off of him. He did his takeoff from 5 yards. Even if that DB sucked up on it, he had enough time to get back in position to make the play. That don't make sense. So my question is that coaching or is that Cam running a sorry route? You know, just little things like that all the time that I see from him.
It's a good point. It is. And, again, I do think it's a hot take, Dak. There's no doubt about it. And I think a lot of people would be sad to see Cam go. And I'll say this, too, and I hate to do it, but we got to let you go, brother. We appreciate you calling in. Got to make a point on the way out here. It would be sad to see Cam Coleman go because I know the family. I know their love for Auburn and how much Cam wants to be here. It would hurt to see him walk away. It would really hurt to see that dude go play somewhere else and absolutely ball out, which is what Auburn has seen happen. Maybe not so much at the receiver spot, but...
But how bad is it that that's the fear of our coaching was so bad that he went to a system that allowed him to run slants and to run post routes and to run zigs and to run curls and just things like that rather than, all right, you have a hitch, you have a go, and you have a hitch and go. And those are the three routes that you have in this Auburn offense route tree. Rather than you go Ohio State, Oregon, anywhere like that, and you just have free roam to go be the receiver that you were in high school, now just at a higher level, but to go show off that athleticism to show that you're much more than a receiver that likes to run across the numbers.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So there's a lot of talent on the roster that Auburn is going to try and retain over the next several days and over the next several weeks, and we'll see what that ends up being for the 2026 season. We got to get to break because when we come back, our man Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC podcast will join us. We'll kind of zoom out to talk about all the coaching searches and the coaching hires made in the conference. He joins us right after this.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. And we get to the phone lines and welcome in our longtime Thursday 3:30 guest. He is the host of the Locked On SEC podcast covering the Southeastern Conference every single day. We got Chris Gordy on the phone lines. Man, we missed you last week, of course, with the Thanksgiving holiday and everything. And we hope you had a good Thanksgiving, enjoyed rivalry weekend, and we have plenty to talk about today, I think.
Man, a Stephen Pearl liner talking about the lineup? Can we get Stephen Pearl to go, join me Thursdays as Chris Gordy joins the guys?
Yeah, I'll submit that and see what I can get done for you with the new head coach that apparently you think is good now since he beat Will Wade last night.
Yeah, I mean, no, I was more joking because I mean, everybody after the first game of the season, everybody wanted him fired. So turns out he can actually coach.
Yes, he can. Well, Auburn, of course, gets the win over NC State last night, and he's got a win over Rick Pitino in St. John's. Chris, what are you talking about?
Yeah, no, it's just one of those things. Everybody freaks out when a new coach takes over, and you got to give them time to settle in. So, big win last night.
Thankfully, Auburn doesn't know too much about new coaches, Chris. It's more of a fans just react that way because it's a very unfamiliar feeling.
Well, as we know, I mean, you can make harsh judgments on a coach based on one game.
I mean, I wouldn't want it any other way, Chris. That's what makes college athletics just so darn fun. We'll talk about basketball on the way out with the ACC-SEC Challenge. A couple of games coming up before conference play really gets into the heart of things. But the story across the Southeastern Conference, other than the SEC Championship game that may or may not have any meaning depending on what the playoff committee wants to do and playoff rankings coming out this Sunday, it's the idea that almost a fourth or close to a half of the league is going to have new head coaches by the time we kick off next season. Chris, give us your evaluation of what's been going on with the SEC coaching carousel.
Yeah, it was wild how quickly this thing moved. I mean, we went from, you know, Lane Kiffin was supposed to make a decision on Saturday to he doesn't make a decision on Saturday to, okay, Sunday morning, Lane Kiffin's going to LSU. And, oh, by the way, Alex Skolish to Auburn, John Summerall to Florida, Ryan Sommerfeld to Arkansas, and then a day later, Ole Miss is like, oh, yeah, and we hire Pete Golding. I mean, it was that crazy. And then, you know, Kentucky, not to be outdone, goes from, hey, we might buy out, you know, Mark Stoops to, okay, yeah, we're firing Mark Stoops to, okay, here comes Will Stein. So, this early signing day is really what has changed the landscape. I mean, we knew, you know, Wednesday was the start of the early signing period, and as we know, it's basically National Signing Day now because you sign about 90% of your class in this now. So, I was talking to multiple people around the league who said, you know, that was the reason for this urgency that, you know, we had this domino effect of all these coaches getting hired so quickly because of the pressure of signing day coming so quickly. But, you know, it's wild. We have a niece who, is a cheerleader at USF, and so we follow that program pretty closely. My wife was at the game on Saturday night as they beat up on Rice, and she even texted me, you know, because the rumors had come out that Alex Skolish had an offer on the table from Arkansas. And she sent me a video of him walking into the stadium with his family, and she said, oh, yeah, the vibe here is he's gone. He's going somewhere tomorrow. I just don't know where that'll be. And the crazy thing is when the Iron Bowl ends, I see the immediate announcement, hey, join us at Auburn tomorrow. There's an announcement will be made at 10 a.m. I'm going, oh, this must be DJ Durkin. They're going to take the interim tag off of him, and he's just going to be the head coach. And I woke up Sunday morning thinking that same thing until I got a text that said, no, it sounded like Ole is just going to go to Auburn. And I said, man, what an absolute home run to hire for Auburn.
Well, it's good hearing that. My question was going to be, if you were ranking some of these head coaching hires, I mean, the A's, the B's, the C's all work their way around the report card. And so for these coaches, do you feel like Auburn, again, based off of what you're saying, may be in that conversation of one of the best coaches in that cycle? And I know that you're a Baton Rouge guy at heart. And so how have you dealt with the excitement versus the dramatics of Lane Kiffin as well?
Yeah, I mean, on the field, Lane Kiffin is a home run. I mean, that's an A-plus for what he does on the football field. If you want to get into all the off-the-field stuff, you know, I think it's just funny, man. I mean, Ole Miss fans are really, they're in jilted ex-lover syndrome right now because it's, you know, I mean, I'm talking to Ole Miss people this week who are like, he wasn't even that good. I mean, it's like, okay, relax, like pump the brakes a little bit. I had somebody trying to tell me yesterday, yeah, Lane didn't even really recruit much. It was Pete Golding did all the recruiting. I'm like, stop. We can admit he's a damn good coach and you didn't want to see him leave, but like, let's not act like he's not good. He is a fantastic coach who, you know, got Ole Miss to their greatest years of football since the 1960s. So, if you're an LSU fan, if you're being objective, it's hard not to get excited about the brand of football he's going to bring. Look, LSU just had one of their worst offensive seasons they've ever had. Lane's going to fix that. You know, we know that he's been the portal king the last few years at Ole Miss. I think four straight years he had a top five portal class. He's going to have the same thing at LSU. They promised him $25 plus million to spend in the portal. But the other part is recruiting. Lane finished his best recruiting class at Ole Miss was 16th. All the other classes ranked in the 20s. At LSU, he's going to start having top 10 recruiting classes there. So then it's the combination of portal with elite talent in recruiting. As long as he's got a good staff around him and a good defensive coordinator, I don't see any reason why LSU can't be a perennial playoff team year in and year out. Then you'll have the 10-2 years where you get left out, or 9-3, something like that. But certainly I think expectations in Baton Rouge are LSU will be a perennial playoff team. So I put Lane Kiffin at the top. I put Golish number two. I know a lot of people are very heady on John Sumrall. I got to see who his OC is and what the offense looks like. I know he's a good defensive mind, but to me, you know, the combination of Alex Golish and then, of course, the news coming out the other day that they retained DJ Durkin, I just think that's a win-win. I think the Golish hire is, the quickest to be an immediate impact and get Auburn going next year. Now, is that 8-4 or better? I think. You can't ignore the offensive impact he had at USF with Byron Brown. They played two very competitive games against Alabama in his time there. They beat Florida this year. So if I'm an Auburn fan, man, I'm just excited, especially with the news that Durkin's going to keep that defense in check. And as we know, I mean, Hugh Freeze said how close they were. If Golish was there this year running that offense, this Auburn team very much might have had a chance to go 10-2 and vie for a playoff spot.
I mean, Hugh Freeze still talking about how close Auburn is and how he's just so upset that he didn't get Auburn over that hump. We're talking with Chris Gordy, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast. He's with us every Thursday here on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn and Opelika. And it's early, right? All these teams just now getting their head coaches hired and trying to get them in with, you mentioned it, the signing day, and now trying to retain a roster and get to the transfer portal, all that stuff. But if there's a coach that has been hired at a place, whether it's in the SEC or even beyond, Chris, if you had to put a $5 bill on one coach to fail at their new school, who would it be? Just for fun, who would you think that coach would be if you had to pick one that's just not going to work at their new school?
I know the sexy pick would be Ryan Silverfield, because I know a lot of people are like, I don't know, that's not a very sexy hire. I do think Ryan Silverfield is it's halfway decent. If you saw his presser today at Arkansas, he's got a plan. They've got money to spend and that sort of thing. But being completely objective here, I think it's Pete Golding. I don't think he is ready to be a head coach. Obviously he had some very good defenses at Alabama, but go ask Alabama fans what they think of Pete Golding. It's a very mixed bag. At Ole Miss, the defense was much improved. Now, look, they brought in a lot of elite level players in there, from Prince Leomond Mayellen to the list goes on and on. Walter Nolan, the defense was good last year. It wasn't great. And then it's kind of the same thing this year. The offense has been the bread and the butter for Ole Miss. And you just lost Charlie Weiss Jr. and Lane Kiffin, the two architects of that offense. I just don't see, unless they make a big time elite OC hire who brings in some big time quarterbacks, I just don't see how that's going to sustain. And so I hate to say it. I mean, I'm not trying to poo-poo on Pete Golding. I don't think that is going to be the right hire. I think Ole Miss made a rash, rush decision on, oh, my God, Lane left us. Well, let's just keep everything in-house, and we'll try to keep this thing going. I don't think that was the right move. They should have gotten in on the Golish, Sumrall, sweepstakes with some of those other guys.
And so as we look ahead to two teams who have not had to hire a new coach in this cycle, Alabama and Georgia competing in the SEC championship game this Saturday, 3:00 inside of Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I'm going to leave this to you, Chris, on how you feel about what this game could be, if it does matter, if it doesn't matter. Is the winner completely good? Is the loser completely safe, or are they doomed? I mean, what is your thought on the entire conversation and talking points around the SEC championship game this weekend, because there's a lot of them, and unfortunately it's just diminishing what this game is, I feel like.
Well, I know Alabama's in a great spot, with what the playoff committee did, bumping them up a spot the other night, but I still think there's a way that where they could find themselves out of this thing, and that's if they get blown out by Georgia. And I don't think that's going to happen, but I mean, crazier things have happened. If Georgia runs away with this one 35-10, I think Bama's out. I think they get ousted from the playoff. But I don't think that'll happen. I do think Georgia wins. I know it's crazy. I mean, what is it, 10 of the last 11 or something? Alabama's won against Georgia, and they just seem to have Kirby's number. But I think things feel differently. If you've watched these two teams the last 4 to 5 weeks, they've been trending in different directions. Georgia's been getting better and better. You know, that defense has been getting more and more stout, like we expected it to be this year. And Alabama's offense has kind of come to a screeching halt the last couple of weeks. You know, they did enough in the Iron Bowl. It's just so funny, you know, when Hunter Yurecek says on the show the other night, oh, yeah, I thought Alabama ran the ball well. And it's like, well, 4 yards a carry, it was an improvement, but it wasn't like they absolutely ran all over Auburn. So, to me, I just feel like it's Georgia's to win right now, and I think Kirby's going to have them focused. I think Alabama's a little bit banged up, you know, with missing Josh Cuevas, their tight end, and, you know, Ty Simpson hasn't played all that great the last couple of weeks, so I think it's advantage Georgia. And but the, you know, I was talking to some Georgia people this week. I said maybe you don't want that bye, because remember Georgia won the SEC championship last year, had the first round bye, and they did not look great against Notre Dame. Notre Dame looked like the more focused, hungry team. And so, you know, you just wonder. You know, last year the teams that had the byes looked like they were sleepwalking. Maybe that's the downside of this. But I do think Georgia wins on Saturday.
And Chris, we don't want to wish away the college football season, but we're in the heart of college basketball season getting underway. The ACC versus SEC challenge. SEC dominated it last year, winning it 14-2. It was the ACC in night one that won it 6-3, but a 6-1 response in night two gets the SEC the 9-7 win in the ACC-SEC challenge. Are there any teams that you are putting your eye on already as maybe a team that wasn't expected to make the tournament now that you expect to make it to the tournament, or maybe a first weekend team that's now a second weekend team? Where do you kind of lie with SEC basketball as a whole?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, my wife is a Kentucky grad, and you know, they've played three ranked teams and lost to all of three of them. So Kentucky's got a long way to go, man. They got a lot of work that they got to do before they, you know, can get to where we expect they'll be. You know, the two kind of surprises so far, Vanderbilt and LSU, both still undefeated. I know LSU hasn't really been tested. I think they played Drake last weekend. They beat Boston College last night, but that's pretty surprising. I know Matt McMahon spent a ton of money in the transfer portal and all that to try to build the team. And so it looks like LSU is actually going to be somewhat respectable. You know, Vandy has crept into the top 20. So, you know, those are kind of the ones to watch. Tennessee has been very impressive to me. The big win over Houston last week was a really nice win for them. You know, I'm curious to see. Look, we know Alabama is going to be just fine. I know they've played a tough schedule as well. A&M is one to watch. The Bucky guy that they hired, I was wondering, you know, how quickly could he get that train on the track? So I think they're going to be halfway decent. So, and then I think Florida, man, they're just going through it too. They're playing some tough games early, and the national champs aren't as good as their team last year. Go figure. But at the end of the day, I still think, you know, you're going to have over half the SEC or a good, you know, close to half the SEC in the tournament picture at the end of the year.
Well, there's a ton going on between football and basketball, and I said it earlier in the show, Chris, baseball will be here before we know it, but we can't go that fast because it just makes you dizzy to think about it. So you're keeping up with it all every single day, Locked On SEC. Tell the people where they can find it and what you got coming up for the rest of this week and the SEC championship game.
Yeah, Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcasts. You've had a good conversation all week, kind of talking about all the new coaching hires in the conference. Our buddy Brian Smith joins us today, talking about the recruiting classes. And, hey, Auburn got some big flips the last day or so. So, yeah, it's all up there, Locked On SEC.
Appreciate your time as always, Chris. Are you going to Atlanta this weekend?
Not going to Atlanta, but I will be making a trip to the Sugar Bowl and maybe a few other playoff games.
Ah, okay. Well, we'll definitely talk to you next week when the playoff rankings are out, since they come out on Sunday night, Sunday afternoon. And then, yeah, we'll talk to you next Thursday about what the college football playoff looks like.
Awesome. Sounds good, guys.
Appreciate it. Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC. Check him out wherever you get your podcasts or search it on YouTube as well. Always love talking to him and getting his thoughts on the latest around the Southeastern Conference. We'll take a break, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Chris Gordy, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, for joining us on the phone lines. Also, Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, who joined us in hour number one. And that's been a part of a very fun show today, talking Auburn basketball, talking Auburn football recruiting, and more coaching carousel stuff. And so it has really flown by, honestly. And so if you missed any of today's show, you can always go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. Check it out in our podcast center on our station website at ESPNAU.com or wherever you get your podcast. Either way is fine. And coming up on tomorrow's show, it is Free for All Friday. We'll have our guy Lee Sterling joining us of Paramount Sports on ParamountSports.com. He'll be picking some of the conference championship games. I think he has a couple of NFL games on the slate that he wants to pick as well. So we'll have him. And then it might be one of our more kind of chill free-for-all Fridays, honestly. We'll talk about the conference championship games and, of course, the P4 games in detail. Talk about the college football playoffs and also make some basketball picks as well, and talk some high school basketball, since we'll have the Crosstown Showdown Part 2 going on tomorrow night between Auburn High and Lee Scott. So tomorrow is going to be very much free-for-all Friday, so be sure you tune in. We'll be back from 2 to 4 here on ESPN.
And if you want to get fired up here to finish up the show, there's quotes from Hugh Freeze that are going around right now with an interview with Justin Hokanson. And
He did the interview with David Pollack with On Three, unless Hoke did an interview with Hugh Freeze. The ones that were going around were Freeze jumping on David Pollack's
I do remember podcast. Seeing that, too. On Three, unless this is just, because that's what I thought it was too, but I'm reading the On Three article. It says, during a sit-down interview with Auburn Sports, Justin Hokanson.
Oh, well, maybe Justin did. Because
this is the one where he says, let's be clear, this is not a beat-up Jackson deal.
Oh.
This was not talking about being close.
He did do another one. Okay, apologies. Apologies, I missed that.
You scared my report of journalism there.
I mean, no. I was, you know, I was close. I almost got it right.
We were both right. But during a sit-down interview, Freeze says, quote, let's be clear, this is not a beat-up Jackson deal. It's never, always the quarterback. There are other factors. I mean, he missed a touchdown throw at Oklahoma to a wide-open Cam Coleman. Those are plays that you have to make to win games, and he would say that too. There's also the Missouri game where we had, what, 8 drops? And then there's moments in the Georgia second half where he misses open guys or the protection is not great. So it's a combination of all of those things. But certainly, it did not work out to the level that he nor I both expected for him and our team. And that's why I'm sitting here.
Oh, boy. You know, so many people told me that they didn't like the way Hugh Freeze threw his players under the bus, and I never really bought into that. I didn't think it was that bad.
We took it as, well, kids now are making money, so they deserve to have a little bit of responsibility.
That's as bad as it gets right there. That's throwing your dudes under the bus.
It's never always the quarterback, but because I went and got him and it didn't work out, that's the reason I don't have a job.
You know what all that comes back to? You know what execution comes back to, Christian Griffin? Coaching. That's a C word we like to use on this word or on this program.
And we're allowed to use that
one. We're allowed to use that one, and we might just ban the other one. And we'll let you use your interpretation however you want to on that. Okay, we're out of time. We got to go. The Drive's coming up next. We are back tomorrow, 2 to 4, for Free for All Friday. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.